on America Can We Talk, I talk about election integrity, border security, healthcare freedom, race relations, energy and tax policy, education policy, free speech and assembly, freedom of religion, and all other issues that touch on the God-given right of every American to life, liberty, and the pursuit of their version of happiness. Stay tuned.
You preach your tolerance, but lecture me. Is there no end to your own hypocrisy? Your God is power, you have no shame. Your only interest is political gain. You hide your eyes and refuse to listen. You play your game.
Coming up next, America Can We Talk with your host, Debbie Georgiatos.
And hello and welcome to America Can We Talk. I'm Debbie Georgiatos, and thank you very much for tuning in to one of our Thursday shows. It's like my favorite day of the week, Thursday, because these shows are always so much fun, and I thank you for tuning in. We have a wonderful guest joining us in studio today. I'll introduce him in one moment. I want to first do some quick thank yous, first of all, to Real News PR and Emilio Diaz, my producer, who just Johnny on the spot at all times make this wonderful show possible. Appreciate that. Also, our music, our intro music, which has come to define this show, is I Am America. The singer is Krista Branch. Her husband is the songwriter, the lyric writer, and she sings that I Am America. I urge you to look up the lyrics, I Am America. It is exactly what the show is all about, is I Am America means people who speak up, get involved, and shape America's future. You are America, not the elected leaders, not the people. We don't surrender control of our future to our leaders. We, the people, are America. It's just great, great, great lyrics that they wrote actually during a presidential campaign, and they accompanied one of the presidential primary candidates in 2016 all over the country, opening his events with I Am America. So Krista Branch, look her up. She's great. Her music is great. And so today we have in studio someone who's joined us before, but I think not in a Thursday show, not in this studio, but it's Professor David Clements. And I guess I still call him professor because he is or was a law professor, no longer doing that. And I met him through some people who were doing activism related to election integrity. Began to understand a little bit what he was talking about election integrity, but by the quickest background, we'll talk more about that. He was a law professor in New Mexico, University of New Mexico, and among the things that he first became outspoken about were mandates by the school relating to wearing masks, which if you've been on my show very often or listened, you know that many conservatives resisted the order to wear masks. And so that was one of the first things he got involved in. He also then became involved in really analyzing election integrity or the lack thereof, election fraud, become a very prominent speaker around the country in all sorts of events. I've heard him, he spoke at one of my Women for Freedom summits 2 years ago, I think. Women for Freedom Summit was fabulous. He was the closing speaker. It was a completely wonderful day a couple of years ago. And he continues his work. But what he's done now is produced a film called Let My People Go. And Let My People Go, I watched it whenever it first came out, I think in December of last year, but whenever it was, I watched it then, and then I watched it last night. We were traveling yesterday, my husband and I were down in Harlingen, South Texas, the Rio Grande Valley, Harlingen and Brownsville. And I told him this story, but I'm gonna tell you before we tune to him. So I was at a meeting, this is related to my campaign for RNC Committee Women. I was at a meeting where I met three new women I hadn't met before. They're kind of connected leaders down there. And so we were talking politics and all sorts of issues. And I mentioned election fraud. And one of them said, oh my gosh, my brother just sent me, he said, the best film he's ever seen on this issue. And she showed me her phone. It was this film, Let My People Go. So I was saying, yeah, he's gonna be on my show tomorrow. So there you go, it's pretty fun. But this film is wide-ranging. It is not simply a discussion of the overabundance of evidence of election fraud in this country. And really not, this isn't election hacking, it's election rigging, but in any case, far deeper than that. He talks about the manipulation of America's culture to where we were more willing to accept things we should not have accepted. So, long introduction by way of saying, this is my friend and our guest today, Professor David Clements.
Hi, Debbie. It's good to be with you.
Good to see you, sir. And honestly, you, as you know, you have inspired many, many people to take a look at this issue again. But this film, Let My People Go, it came out in December of 2023. Correct?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, okay. And then among the things that happened, and you know, I have two clips I sent Mr. Emilio. One is the teaser for it, which I thought was really extraordinary, captured a lot of it. But the other one was a message from you, the message in the very beginning of the idea of what you hope this film would do and how you want it spread, and the reaction the film received from the social media world. And I think actually, hey, Mr. Emilio, can we put it on this screen too? So everybody, okay, so I wanted to show you, this is what Professor Daniel Clemens put out about this very film. We'll play that first. This is not the lengthy one. This is the, you know which one I mean? You got it, okay. Yes, he does. Okay.
There's still a disconnect with most Americans that don't associate what happened on November 3rd, 2020 with January 6th. But the reality is everyone that's rotting in there right now is in there because of what happened on November 3rd.
Did you have confidential human sources dressed as Trump supporters inside the Capitol on January the 6th prior to the doors being opened?
Again, I had to be very careful.
It should be a no.
But how do you change that government when our politicians are selected rather than elected? When everyone is too scared to talk about the slave master that made it all possible?
It's an act of psychological warfare that you do to prisoners of war. We didn't know where we were going, why they were moving us.
So while the J6ers wear real chains, we continue to wear invisible ones. Oh, how I dream of breaking through the feed that keeps us asleep.
What I'm saying is nobody's following the federal law, including the vendors.
In China in particular, the advanced persistent threats, some of them are massive organizations, larger than many U.S. defense organizations.
You're talking about advanced persistent threat level players.
On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the most difficult, how easy is it to hack into these systems?
Can I go to a 0.5 instead of a 1?
Across the country, when you've got systems that are in use in these elections and you can't look at them, it's beyond belief. Absolutely, it was stolen because it never should have been certified.
In the simplest of terms, we use proprietary machines that use programs to steal, shuffle, dilute, and plunder our most valuable property interest, our votes.
If Donald Trump's providential, aren't you providential? Ask yourself why you're here.
We are transferring power from Washington, D.C., and giving it back to you, the people.
You cannot say that this went well. Those are lost votes.
There's something wrong with our system.
I hope you want to tip.
Today, I am here to overturn the money changers' table.
This is a battle of good and evil. And there will come a day when you will sit before a higher judge.
Not only will we win, but I will spend the rest of whatever years I have on this earth with my wife, with my children, praising God. And I'll encourage them and admonish them, you better keep this alive. Keep the memory alive. Because I don't want to go back to hell.
Okay, that is so impressive. I mean, just the introduction of it all, so impressive. Let me start with this. You've spoken around the country about the evidence of election fraud. And you continue to, I assume, and the methods of election fraud. So why'd you try to make a movie about it? Why is that just a different way to get the message out?
Well, I think part of it was I've done about 300 live evidentiary presentations, and these are sometimes 2-3 hours long. And so we treat them as kind of training workshops. And I did that in about 47 states, and it's just mind-numbing because I'm like, I can't reach enough people. The people that show up in person and receive the presentations, they get it. It's like, wow, okay, there's massive, not just voter fraud, but systemic fraud. And so I thought, man, it would be great if I could just do a PowerPoint, put it on Rumble, maybe something very, very humble, but get the point across that people could take. And I happened to know some artists that were looking to do a documentary. And it was a culmination of their desire to do something very ambitious and my need to tell the story that we partnered together to make the film.
Okay, before we dive into these things I mentioned a moment ago, I think was so profound how you laid out in the film how we got society to a place where we were amenable to agreeing with it. But backing up from that, and just on the topic of the level, depth of evidence there exists about election fraud, I would just tell you, recently I was talking to someone who's considered a national expert, talks about election fraud all the time. Speaks a lot about how we're gonna fix it all. But I was trying to make the distinction between legislation that limits the capacity or the potential, you know, shortening the period of early voting, more clarity about what identification is required, fixing voter rolls, so you know who's. But when I got around to saying, but we have to really get at the notion that the content of our voter rolls and the outcome as reported is manipulable, it's riggable. I like the word riggable, because rig is different. Hack is one time, rigging is setting. And this, I won't say the person's name because I didn't ask her, but she absolutely said, no, that's not right. So even in this world that you're working in and you've put so much evidence forth, I'm telling you, it's a super prominent person, and she just said, no, that's not true. So, I mean, how much headway are you making?
Well, I think if you look at Rasmussen polls, it's a good, there's a good starting point. Last time I checked, it was about 80% of the GOP believe that our elections are rigged. Now, the degree in which they understand that it's been rigged, or whether it's censorship only or it's machine driven, not everyone has the same level of granularity that I do, but that's because I work with and consult with experts. So a lot of people have strong opinions, but most of those opinions are born out of either willful ignorance or they just haven't done the work. And the experts that we consult with in this film, many of which are nation state level experts with QSCI clearances. So these are the world's best experts in their respective field. I'm gonna listen to them and hear what they have to say more than someone's anecdotal evidence of, I'm a Republican, I live in a red county, Trump won, therefore it doesn't happen here. That's kind of the argument that I'm confronted with quite a bit. No, it's systemic. And we can drive down with excruciating detail on how manipulation is taking place in Texas, New Mexico, wherever.
When you talk about manipulation, just because for those people who are listening, hopefully people have never really heard what you present. Mm-hmm. I mean, we talked more about Dr. Douglas Frank. He's got mountains of data, graphs that will show you, you know, data he pulls down from public sources relating to the content of voter rolls, relating to the outcome. And what he's showing is an algorithm that bears out. But that kind of stuff, following him, and if you're not mathematically minded, you know, I am not mathematically minded. I had to listen to finally go, oh my gosh, now that I see what he's saying, I can't believe our entire system is rigged. So as you go around, I mean, I want to talk more about what you're, without getting the whole hour dedicated to it, how do you describe to people who don't understand the problem what the evidence is that you've seen that makes you certain it's not just hacking, a few dead people voting, cemetery vote, but actual rigging?
Well, you have to start with the obvious. Most of us were told that we had increased voter turnout, and there was a statistic that was given to us that we had about 65% voter turnout in 2020. And if you look at the national trend, historically, you're looking at 57 to 62% is your voter turnout. Well, you find out that statistic was manipulated. They were looking at all eligible voters over the age of 18, many of which were not US citizens, some were convicted felons. They weren't looking at registered voters. If you actually just do the basic math of, let's take the media at its word that Trump got 74, 75 million votes, and that Biden got 81 million votes. If you add those totals up and compare it to the registered voter file, that's 95% turnout. It's absurd. So those are the types of examples of, okay, how can you have a 30-point deviation from all historical elections? And then you start unpacking the bellwether county, Seth Keschel's analysis. But I wasn't really interested in that. I wanted to look at what optimizes the environment. And the most crucial record that we've looked at is this thing called a cast vote record summary. It's basically a replay of how votes were cast and in what order. And it's a very, very compelling piece of evidence that most people ignore. And what we're finding is uniformly in the 1,000 areas that we've retrieved these records, we see an injection for a preferred candidate and a linear drive towards a predetermined set point. That's what the record shows us.
Say that last part again. We see a...
Okay, so an injection of votes in a way that is basically front-loading.
Yes.
Towards a preferred candidate, and then a linear drive towards a predetermined set point. And some of you might be thinking, well, why is the number going down? Or is it driving down? It's because the injection basically gives you, like a 90%, advantage. No one's going to believe that Joe Biden won 90% to 10%. So you preload it in order to have it settle into a believable margin of victory, which would be like 51, 49, 60, 40.
Right.
And we're finding that everywhere. And that's just one small sliver of the evidence that we cover in the documentary, but it's evidence of a PID control. And anyone that understands PID controllers, it's a closed feedback system. It's algorithmic in nature, it's impossible, and yet this compelling evidence is ignored by every pseudo-expert out there, and I just, for the life of me, I'm sitting there going, why? Why are you ignoring this evidence?
Is it too hard for the average expert who's not you said you're not mathematical yourself, but is it the complexity of what you are describing that the average person just can't grasp it? And I mean, I'm completely serious. When I read what you've done and Dr. Frank and Seth Keschel, I mean, I just immerse myself in this because I find it just so fundamentally unbearably unacceptable in America.
I don't think it's too complex.
God is disagreeing. No, God is agreeing with us. That's it.
God agrees with me on this. Well, I think the utility that I provide that's different than Dr. Frank and some of the, I call them kind of the brain trust, that they're fascinated with math. I'm a lawyer by trade. I don't like it, but I consult with a lot of engineers and experts. It's my job to distill what is complex and make it easy to understand. And the problem isn't that it's hard to understand. The problem is that we're up against a censorship regime that keeps us from getting you a clear understanding. And the film actually addresses the Castle records. We use animation. We use all kinds of kind of funny ways of bringing the information to you. And we explain it quite clearly.
Yeah. I'm sorry, did I cut you off?
No,
okay. Well, on the subject of censorship, because part of what, the people who still... I want to go in 10 directions, but the people who still want to say, well, there's not, I mean, yeah, we always have a little bit of a problem, and it was a little bit surprising that Trump didn't win in 2020, but part of what causes them to be skeptical about the overabundance of evidence of election fraud is the censorship. It's because where they go read things, unless they, only listen to very conservative sources, they read things, and mostly through through what social media does, what they do on Twitter and Facebook and YouTube, every place, the actual information is shut down. And so it's a censorship regime that it causes the average person to say, well, mostly what I read is they're dismissive of election fraud. So you're up against that too.
Well, yeah, they're going to a news site hoping to be informed, and instead they're getting propaganda that misinforms them. It attempts to discredit people like myself through name calling. I've seen that there's dedicated Wikipedia pages, and so I come from this background of no social media, award-winning prosecutor, award-winning professor, and I apply the same diligence that I had from my prior life to this realm, and instead of the substance being engaged with, a critique on the substantive audit reports that we put out, we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of footnote, meticulous documentation. Not one substantive refutation has been made towards any things that we put out there. But instead, you'll get basically what amounts to an obituary from the Washington Post saying that, look at this once promising professor that's lost his mind. And that's the work of a propagandist. And so, we get that, and that's part of the issue that we address in the film, because there's lots of people, without even looking at the evidence, they'll say, well, professor, if this was true, how come the courts aren't looking at it? If it's true, how come Fox News hasn't looked at it? And that just shows you the level of deception that we think that the truth only exists if some pundit on Fox News says it out loud. And you've had people that have had their own awakening, like Tucker Carlson, part of the Dominion settlement was to get rid of Tucker. And he has now been free to go on other platforms such as X. And guess what? He's telling everyone, beware of the machines. He's yep. seen enough.
Oh, yeah. He's just taken off after leaving Fox. And I wonder daily if they're thinking, man, I wish we could rein him in. Besides, more people follow him than anybody on Fox, mm-hmm. period. Okay. But back to the election thing. So I want to hit these kind of points. Number one is the evidence, the real, true, hard and fast evidence of election fraud, overwhelming. And not just election hacking, but rigging, a systemized rigging. You see it, many other experts present it. And yet we keep plowing forward. As you say, people say, well, the courts didn't stop it. And the answer of that obviously is the courts didn't look at the substance of the evidence. They dismissed things based on standing or, latches. It's some other argument that was procedural and yet when you say that to people, I mean, unless you're a lawyer, maybe that doesn't mean very much to people. But, you know, I understand exactly, obviously. You know,
Look, to me, it's what I'm saying now is not hard to articulate all. Well, when it was difficult was just after November 3rd, 2020, having an intuition that was informed by my background as a prosecutor and as an investigator going, okay, there's fraud here. And then being proven right for 3.5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, there have been ample opportunities to discredit the work. And so I think what we do is we oftentimes lose sight of the victories where now people are saying, like, I get that the elections are rigged, but what can we do about it? We've actually earned that challenge when 2 years ago, everyone didn't believe us. Now it's like, yeah, of course, it's everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. And even someone I got into a dispute was actually a legislator in Texas where she said, well, of course the 2020 elections were stolen. And we know that 2020 election was stolen, but there's nothing wrong with the machines. Yeah. And you know, I don't know how you go, but I mean, I'm going to keep going back to that
person.
I've worked
with experts in Texas in particular. We looked at the cast vote record summary for Collin County, and we found an impossible arrangement of votes. And we brought that to one of the local county commissioners. And instead of doing anything about it, he got up and left the restaurant because he didn't want to hear it. People don't want to hear uncomfortable truths, but that means that that tabulator set that was used in Collin County was facilitating fraud. And how can I say that with confidence? Because the only audible record that tells you whether or not you've got an impossible sequencing of votes is that cast vote record summary. And that's pursuant to HAVA, the Help America Vote Act. It's an audible trail and it's intended for the public. So now the public is asking for those CVRs. And guess what? Uniformly, the clerks are being instructed, don't give anyone these records. Why is that? What do they have to hide?
Right, right. That's a whole other thing in this issue is if everything was square and absolutely truthful and compliant with the law, they would happily share things with you, but they don't. Not just you, but with anyone trying to look into it. They struggle to get records. Okay, I want to turn to something else, though. What I love you did in the film, and it was in the piece we played a moment ago, but you tied the evidence of election fraud in 2020, November 3rd, the election day, to what happened on January 6th and how it is, I actually made me think again last night, rewatching your film. If you really think there's nothing wrong with the November elections of 2020, then of course you think, what in the world were those lunatics doing in Washington on January 6th? Mm-hmm. I mean, you do think they must have really been an insurrection. So I love that you tied those two things together. And I love also the portions you displayed about what the prisoners are doing on January 6th. Did you say in that film they're not doing the national anthem every night anymore?
Well, they're still doing the national anthem, but the ability to communicate with the J6ers at the corner where they could turn on and off the lights, letting us know that they can hear us. They've been moved away from the corner. There's still a group of patriots that show up every night. Mickey Whithoff, the mother of Ashley Babbitt, is there on most nights, Nicole Reffitt. And without fail, they do a roll call, which we actually do. We show in the film where we take a roster of everyone that's currently incarcerated and we honor them. There's prayers. We get live jail calls where they can let us know how they're doing. And we end each of the prayer vigils every night. And it's been going on since, I think, August of 2022, every night. Someone's out there doing a live stream. And it's really amazing. I think when you look at the reason why it was so important to tell that part of the story with the elections is that most Americans, if they're honest with themselves, their intuition was disturbed on November 3rd, 2020. Either you're a demon, leftist, Marxist, going, I don't care. that something was off. This favors what I want. We right. get rid of the bad Trump guy. But most conservative folks saying, look, I've never experienced an election like that in any way possible. So those folks used their intuition, showed up in person, consistent with the First Amendment rights. And one of the things I just want to push back on is I know how they're characterized as crazy and people that showed up. Most of the agitation was done by unindicted Fed co-conspirators that, if you look at all of the juiciest clips that have been played on MSNBC and all these other places, they all involve people that were never charged, but should have. And those are federal authorities. They basically got people caught up in what they did, and you had peaceful people like Isaac Yoder walk in his George Washington costume, was given a guided tour by velvet ropes, walked out, and now he's in prison today.
Yeah.
But yet Ray Epps and his kind are still out there.
Absolutely. No, I'm sorry if I was confusing how I worded that. I fully understand what happened. I mean, I fully understand that the FBI, in fact, there was a senator who came up recently with, he was talking about, I now have seen the evidence of people who were FBI agents who went in, came to the Capitol, went into a room, and came out dressed as Trump supporters. He said, I've seen that video. And he's saying, so this was FBI agents dressing as Trump supporters, and there many of them were there to agitate and to get the crowd worked up. No, I'm completely agreeing.
Yeah, and I guess what I'm saying, though, is that there's so many J6 families, and they carry with them this pain that maybe I shouldn't have gone in. And they're flogging themselves over their conduct when the conduct of the coup that took place on November 3rd not only justified their participation in a peaceful protest, but more importantly, the only thing that anyone did wrong, in my legal opinion, is that only 1 million people showed up instead of 80 million. And more importantly, we left. We should have never left until we had real justice. And the proof of that is that you've seen a weaponization that has devastated over 1,250 families. The omnibus bill that was passed a year and a half ago gave them a new budget. This last January 6th, three doors were kicked in, adding to the ranks. And you've got people like Jake Lang, John Mellis, Ryan Samsel that are still awaiting trial 3 years into their incarceration. I've gone after murderers and rapists, and they were entitled to a speedy trial. These folks have misdemeanor charges at best, and they're still languishing in a prison.
Yeah, I mean, this will be, and you said it before too, I think, but this will be 50 years from now, looking back on America, this the biggest stain in America's justice system. I mean, we have treated people with, they don't get due process, or they're rotting away. And you're right, the American people backed off from them and didn't continue to stand up when they should have. And, you know, the entire notion, back to what you were saying a moment ago, people showed up at that point in 2021. They didn't have all the evidence you've now accumulated and Dr. Frank has. But if you had a lick of sense and you've been paying attention, you know, the day the elections happened in 2020 and all the abnormalities, I mean, you know, they shut down in the middle of the night because they have, you know, everyone's got a water leak problem at the same time. They stopped counting and all of a sudden in the morning, who knew? You know, millions of votes or the majority
shows
up.
One thing though, Debbie, that I think that was obvious though, even for people that couldn't, you know, amass all the evidence, is that processes were broken day one. And why I get more fired up talking about the J6 stuff than I do about the elections is that, and as a former prosecutor, I've seen the representation that criminals are afforded. But when you've got a bunch of Midwestern Christians that are going there and participating in prayer all day and being treated in much more haphazard fashion than the worst of the worst in the criminal system that I saw for a better part of a decade, it's not only sickening. So it's not so much about, well, let's just look over the fact that people are still languishing in trial without trial for 3 years. It's Brady versus Maryland has unrecognizable with the J6ers. The right to confront your accuser is unrecognizable when it comes to the J6ers. The level of jury bias proven by the statistical surveys that are out there is unlike any place we've been. It's as if the Beltway, 10 square miles, has thrown out the book of tried and true precedents that go back 50, 60 years on the presumption of innocence. right to bail. Everything is obliterated when it comes to the J6ers. And the urgency of trying to get people this film is to understand that, just for a second, imagine that it's your daughter, your child that's locked away. You would want the law to apply to them fairly and equally, and it's just not happening.
What explains the federal court judges? I have to tell you, I went to law school in Washington, D.C., and I actually did hold the judiciary for many years in quite high esteem, not just D.C., but I mean, around the country. I assume you make it to a federal court judgeship, and not that I understand they're still going to be people and they have political biases, but it seems like the entire judiciary has just surrendered to this mob mentality of getting these people. And maybe I've said it all, but what explains that?
Well, I think one thing that we have to press pause is that this U.S. Supreme Court bears some culpability with the crisis we're in right now, because they had an opportunity to take up many cases that would have addressed the issue, and they didn't. Number two, many of the federal judges are appointed by politicians that are protecting the swamp, and there's a vested interest not to run afoul of that. But more importantly, if you look at the state judges, because many lawsuits were filed in state court, those judges appear on the ballot. They've appeared on the ballot for retention elections, and there's a vested interest to not disturb the very machinery and software that somehow let them through. So when we confront county commissioners about fraud, and they're not even remotely curious, or judges, you have to understand that if we find something, and we will find something, it undermines the very existence of them having the position in the first place. And that's created a very, very tough and almost untenable way to investigate. The other thing is this, is I've taken evidence to county sheriffs, DAs that I've worked with, and they would look at me and they'd say, Dave, what do you want me to do? And I'm like, well, what do you mean? It's like, well, Department of Homeland Security has badges and guns too. This isn't like you're going after a mafia or some criminal that everyone looks down on. You actually would have to take on your own government. And that's the real issue, is that we haven't come to terms with the fact that our rigged elections aren't being rigged by China. They're being rigged by our own government, the Department of Homeland Security.
That was one of my questions I had in mind. You point to Homeland Security. People also talk about the CIA being somehow involved in the rigging. You think that's accurate?
I think it's indistinguishable. I think what you saw were America's involvement in messing with people's elections overseas for 30 years. The same software, the same rigged machines that are used overseas are used in America. And so I think what you're looking at is post-9/11, you see this amalgamation of all of the different intelligence networks that started using their tools against foreign terrorists, and they just expanded its reach to domestic Americans. And so when the FBI puts out a bulletin that people that question elections are terror suspects, it's no wonder why we're in this environment. And that's something worth being concerned about, because if you are a domestic terror suspect, that gives a DOJ employee access to a FISA court to secretly surveil people.
Yeah. You know, I remember right after, and I don't ever say that after Biden won, after he occupied the White House, we were occupied country because he didn't win, but it was no more than 6 weeks after he took office in January 2021, the Department of Homeland Security put out a bulletin, and it basically said, if you question the legitimacy of the 2020 election, you might be a domestic terrorist. I'm paraphrasing, but that was the gist of it. I actually had a national security expert get on the show from Washington, just say, have you ever seen anything like this? Because it was threatening that early on, and you probably saw that.
Well, not only have I seen it, when I've been the target of hit pieces from Reuters and NPR and CNN and Washington Post, they make it a point to hit all those check boxes that you just referred to that went out from their bulletin. And my point is this, is that that gives them legal authority to seize, even without my knowledge, my communications, listen in on my phone calls. We found J6ers that they had basically surveillance devices located in their home. They didn't know that were placed there by federal authorities.
Wait. J6ers who had not yet been arrested. You mean they were J6ers and somehow, go ahead.
If you're suspected of domestic terrorism, they go to FISA and get the secret warrant. They don't, you're not gonna be notified It's not like they're going to serve you with the warrant before they go surveil.
Okay, what happened to the foreign part of FISA? Foreign, I mean, isn't this, is, I mean, I understand they're misusing it, but wasn't the original intent of FISA to be for foreign agents?
That's been the foothold that opened the door, and we all thought they're not going to use this against us, surely, right? That's what Edward Snowden was warning people of.
Okay, so have you been watching this? Tucker had a lengthy interview, Tucker Carlson, with, and I was texting somebody, his first name, Mike Benz.
Yes, I did a deep dive on that.
Oh yes. My gosh, yes, staggering stuff. Because I was reminded of it by what you said a moment ago about how our intelligence agencies have been and felt that was supposed to be doing this. They were trying to influence foreign elections, trying to take down certain leaders and put other leaders in place. And at the time we thought, well, that's okay, because, you know, the Russians are probably doing it, so we're just fighting back what they're doing. You know, we legitimize it. But that mentality, Benz is saying, this whistleblower Benz is saying, it's right here now.
Yes.
And this is our agencies using these tactics against American citizens.
In particular, he focused on a group called the Atlantic Council.
Yeah.
And the Atlantic Council, whether people know it or not, give policy guidance to this group called the Center for Internet Security. It's a non-government organization with no congressional oversight. And they were responsible for implementing these things called Albert sensors. These are computers that reside behind county firewalls that can monitor election data real time. And they also provide the policy guidance for all of the quote-unquote non-voting technology. And just so people know that just because something is called non-voting technology doesn't mean it isn't. It's a legal fiction. And so there's virtually this no man's land when it comes to your poll books, where there's virtually no congressional oversight. Your election management systems, there's no congressional oversight. Everyone's focusing on that tabulator black box because that's quote-unquote voting technology. My point is this, is that Mike Benz gives you a masterclass on how Atlantic Council and CIS are censoring people. What I would add to the conversation in the mix is that that same entity has created the very infrastructure of election systems that we use in America. So everything that you're worried about from what he said to silence the American voices, they are also the ones that have architected the system that we use in America, down to the components.
Okay. Well, you know, I was afraid it was that late. I didn't look at the clock, and I want to be sure to hit a whole bunch of other points. But part of what I want to get to was, I didn't, in introducing you, I wanted to say something I hadn't said, which was, you know, you're an award-winning prosecutor, former very successful prosecutor. You didn't just wander out of law school and go and become a professor. I mean, you actually practiced law and were a prosecutor, and also a professor, a award-winning professor. One little thing that was in your film that you won the award. I'm not sure the name of it. I probably should have written it down, but the name of the award. But then there was a picture showing there, and they had blocked out your face. I mean, the school, in displaying this award, blocked out your face with some stupid sign.
Yeah.
So
the timing was basically I stood up to my university president when they called all the Trump supporters insurrectionists. And I responded the next day, because that was 50% of at least my student base that would fall into that category. Because I don't teach at NYU or Cal Berkeley, I teach in New Mexico. We have ag people, we've got cowboys, and
real Americans.
We have real Americans here. And so we push back against the narrative, and it was talking about elections that put a major bulls on my back. But the other thing we talked about was the jab and the mask and everything else. And so I was nominated 2 years in a row for the Patricia Crismore Teaching Excellence Award. It's the highest honor that my college offered. And so I was already nominated for it the year prior. The year that I was suspended, I won it. In fact, the dean, much to his credit, showed up to my class wearing a mask, giving me the award in front of my students, in which I was not wearing a mask, and I had told the students in my class, you don't have to wear one. And he was told by the Board of Regents that if he's not wearing a mask, you shouldn't be giving an award. You need to escort him from the university grounds.
Oh, goodness.
To his credit, he didn't do that. And because he didn't do that, his name's Jim Hoffman, he was stripped of his deanship.
Wow.
So he actually did had a great act of courage, saying, I've recorded the class. He says, I may not agree with everything that Professor Clements has to say, but I believe in his freedom to say it. And the next day, I was suspended, locked out of my office, and 2 months later, I was terminated after I had to go through kangaroo court. Some of that's featured in the documentary.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we can't get off on this except to say, the look on the faces of some of those people in that Zoom call meeting with you, just excruciating, just reeking of sanctimonious, you know, how could you be so foolish attitude. Okay, but I want to get on, you had a great theme in your film, which I want to also feature. So connecting the election in the fall of 2020, in November 2020, and then January 6th, and the recognition that they both of them were, they basically are the very connected events because election fraud was real and massive and systemic. And however those people knew at that time, they knew something was wrong. They knew for all sorts of reasons. I used to argue that right after the election, that even what we know so far, these points make it irrefutable. But part of what I want to hit on is you were talking about what Michael Benz is saying about our government used to, we trained and learned how to manipulate society. We did it for other countries. Now they've turned it against us. I'm going to tell you that I think even the average person today in America would still say, I don't know what the numbers are, they wouldn't do that. They wouldn't do that. And we just have this resilient sense among Americans, and I hope the number is going down, but our government would never do anything wrong. So part of what is so hard in what you're trying to do, and what I try to do, is to wake people up to believe, to get rid of their biases that assume our government's always good, always right, and they wouldn't do anything wrong. But you touched on a bunch of pieces of societal manipulation that were really, really good kind of groundwork being laid. So you ran through COVID, you ran through the experiment, Bezmenov's points, and then what those students or people who were manipulated into causing electric shock, or believing they were causing electric shock, hit on someone else. Just, if you can, lay out for us, what was that, you know, what you're trying to get at there, how what you described made us more vulnerable to accepting election fraud.
Well, if you don't address the hurdle of the psychological propaganda, once again, I can have the evidence laid out for you concisely. But if you're ideologically possessed, there's no level of rational argumentation that I can give you that's going to convince you that I'm right if you're possessed. So we actually come at it from either a psychological standpoint and a spiritual one. And so, you know, we believe, I mean, people that worked on the film and myself included, that we've evicted this righteous standard that I call God for my Christian faith at the school, the university, the church. And whether people want to admit it or not, if you're going to evict some moral standard from the public square, something else will come in and take up residence. And the film endeavors to show you what happens when you do that. When virtue is eliminated in your culture centers, you're going to have something so unvirtuous as the trans movement. And so just case in point, if I can't prevail upon you that there are two sexes, how in the world am I going to prevail upon you that the election was rigged? I mean, that's where we're at. And so it's going to take some type of eviction, spiritual eviction of all of the cultural demonic things that we're seeing before we can get back to even having a conversation that's intelligible. So if as long as people can tell me that they're a boy today and a girl tomorrow, I can't reason with that.
Right.
So we had to address that. We had to address that major issue that the reason why we're not prevailing in the courts of law on the election front is because there is a propaganda feed that's 24/7 that's continually drumming to someone's head a lie. And that's what we're trying to break people free of.
on that subject of propaganda feed, I think I told this a long time ago, but I had the chance to visit, when I was very young, visit Russia when it was still communist. And then we had a little tour walking around Moscow and places, and we had some guide. Well, there were telephone poles, and they had this loudspeakers coming out, and it was constant, in Russian, constant talking. So we finally said to the guide, what, and because you couldn't walk on the streets without hearing it, I said, what is that? And he said, it's communist propaganda. They are 24/7, you can't be walking into shops without hearing, you know, evil imperialistic America and capitalist pigs and, you know, communism is freedom, whatever they were, I don't know what they were saying. But it is kind of like that now in America, not, you know, loudspeakers in the street, but what you're describing.
Well, it's more effective now because we don't need a loudspeaker. We just use our smartphones.
Yeah.
And we don't ask questions about who manufactured this phone, who are the big tech giants that are allowing us to see certain things that show up in our feed. So it's the selection of what shows up in your phone that gives you the illusion of free will, that I am informed because I check my sources on my phone. You check the sources that you're allowed to find.
Yeah.
And at least in the Soviet Union, you can see the loudspeaker blaring propaganda at you and make that judgment call. It's much harder now.
It is a brilliant point. You also played a clip from Bezmenov, I'm not sure if I'm saying his name correctly, but the guy who converted, who was a communist, and he was trying to say, here are the four stages we use to take down America. And he's talking about how communists psychologically want to take down America. And you know, I think I wrote them in my notes. I was typing this while I was listening. Yeah. Demoralization, destabilization, crisis, and normalization. He's using those as kind of measures of what communists will do. Well, it isn't communist China doing this to us now, or maybe they are a little bit, but what you were taking from it, I believe, or why you had it in there was, it's kind of the operations that are happening to us, even though it's not the external force of communism. It's,
well, if you look at the writings of any communist military mind, they knew that they weren't going to defeat the United States through military arms or through old iron. They were going to attempt a soft power coup where you convince Americans in the Midwest that, you know, maybe there's something to this communism. And they do it through Confucius Institutes under the guise of language training. They are very careful to not talk about Mao because they know that Mao is a monster, but they'll talk about Confucius. They'll buy studios like Legendary Studios for $3.5 billion instead of some military aircraft. Why is that? Because they know that the best way to defeat us is to indoctrinate us and take our stories. So they are literally taking over vectors of Hollywood story making. And at that point, you're changing the very fabric of the country. And so at that point, it's not really so much like where I have to worry about China banging over a hack and changing a vote. When your ideology has pervaded most of the political framework in our country, and you've got people that are indistinguishable in their philosophy, whether it's AOC, Bernie, many Republicans, from someone in communist China, you don't need to be hacked by communist China. Just have these folks at the helm of your controls with respect to elections.
A brilliant point, and you're exactly right. And it is amazing because people feel, well, we're stronger, we're America, we're stronger than China, not recognizing the ideology has invaded. You mentioned AOC and Bernie Sanders. I would argue most of the American left, or as I try to call them, the anti-American left, even if they wouldn't consciously say, yes, I've embraced socialism, I've embraced communism, the tenets of it, the thinking, the presumptions about what the role of government is, has overtaken the left. And so they don't feel bad if they are, they don't feel that they're acting wrongly if they manipulate society into believing craziness. It is what they think is the right thing to do.
Yeah, and I think we just need to apply that scalpel a little bit further than just the left and take a look at everyone with an R by their name, because it's actually much more nefarious. Most people can spot Bernie Sanders a mile away and say, okay, I understand I don't want that for America.
Yeah.
But when you see the absolute duplicity of Republicans, and I'm talking about Kevin McCarthy, Mike Johnson, they made promises that they still haven't kept with respect to the release of J6 footage.
Yeah.
And I'm just sitting there going, the slow walking, in many respects, is more dangerous to our country than just knowing that someone's a villain. And that's something where I think we all need increased discernment to apply pressure to the Republican Party. Because right now, the biggest obstacle in election security hasn't come from the left, my experience as a conservative. It's basically come from many conservative voices out there saying it's not a problem.
Yeah, most dangerous thing of all, and so troublesome whenever I hear someone say it's not really a problem. I was trying to think, do you know it's a problem and you just don't want to admit it, don't want to undertake it, or you think you benefited from it? Or are you really that ignorant? Or do you just have your hands over your ears? I don't want to hear, I don't want to know. Because no one paying attention can actually think that. They just can't.
I mean, I think if you have to ask the question, you already have an answer. 3 years later, I had patience maybe like in February or March of 21.
Yeah.
But for crying out loud, it's 2024. And if you're still agnostic on whether the elections are rigged, I think that's willful at this point.
Okay, so here's the thing, we have a microphone and we allow people to ask questions. And so I'm just saying that now in case you have a question, to get it ready, I wanna ask you two more things. One is, you had some interviews with some people in the film, numerous people, but one was this gentleman, Isaac Yoder, I think the name was, yeah. 10 months in prison. I mean, you know, you said a moment ago about, imagine if it were your child, your son or daughter. I mean, you'd be out of your mind to think your child was locked up over nothing. And we have whatever the number currently is, still incarcerated. And we had the DOJ announcing, this is now 2 or 3 months ago, but saying we have about another 1,000 we're gonna go after. They're not done. In fact, they just arrested a reporter, you probably saw the story, at Blaze News.
Steve Baker.
Marched him out in handcuffs. They know what he did. He went into the Capitol, reported whatever he did, took a video, left. That's all they know. And they'll still do it. I guess I'm raising it because the brazenness has not diminished in the slightest. They're unafraid of what the American public thinks.
Yeah.
So what is it? What is it we do? How do we make them fix it for me right here?
Fix it for you. I think what we're looking at, I'll give you an anecdote, and I hope that this hits the mark. I was very down about how in the world do we save this great nation. And there's a gentleman by the name of Ion Paea. He suffered under Romanian communism. Mm. And in 1989, at the public square, he had armored vehicles, soldiers with guns. He says, David, I was there where communism fell in one day. And I think what we're looking for is supernatural revelation. Now, the film gets into the mechanics of the rig. But I've asked myself this question. Why is it that Debbie Georgiato sees more clearly than most? Why is it that I see what I think is clear as day? Why are there large numbers in Texas and across the country that know what happened was rigged, and yet others are still sheep? And it's not because you're smarter. It's not because I'm smarter. It's because God in his wisdom provided some form of revelation. And so one of the things that we put forth in the film may not have been the answer you're looking for was, I think Lincoln was confronted with a similar scenario in the Civil War. Countrymen were murdering one another. And everyone remembers the Emancipation Proclamation. Few people remember that just a few months later, he did a proclamation for a National Day of Repentance called by national leaders in the US Senate. And within calendar year, you had the most unlikely vote to secure the 13th Amendment and abolish slavery. That was supernatural work. And I think we've done the work in understanding the mechanics of elections. We've done everything we can to put people on notice, but it's gonna take something like that. And so one of the prescriptions that I think is most important isn't me showing up to your community meeting and telling you how machines are bad. There needs to be revival. And I think the way that it manifests I believe that Christ is the King. I think he occupies a throne. And when we meet his conditions as set forth in 2 Chronicles, he moves from the throne room and he sits down in the courtroom of heaven and takes a seat. And I think he's just ready to make a verdict. And when that happens, I think what you're gonna find, instead of the brain trust, the conservative who sees clearly, people that have been, wandering around like lost sheep are gonna see. And I think it's gonna come by the millions. That's my hope and prayer, but It's because Pastor Yon told me that he saw it happen in a communist regime where there's no hope. I've got to believe that God still has something to say about America. Yeah.
Okay, so if we, I have 17 more questions, but I would like to pause and say, I would love to have you raise your hand, ask a question. You have to talk right into the microphone so it goes out on air. Does anybody have any questions? No, go ahead. Yeah.
Sorry, it's not a question. You know, first sitting here, it just kind of just makes me cry for our country. And then steam coming out, I thank you for mentioning that really we've got Republicans that are really standing as a roadblock. I don't know if you know that in Texas now, our criminal court of appeals has now banned the attorney general from prosecuting any election fraud case unless he's brought in by the DA. In the it's just unbelievable.
Well, I heard you had a consequential election.
Yes.
Yesterday or the day before.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
And it seems like some of the obstacles to Ken Paxton were removed. So perhaps you've got a brighter future here in Texas on the ability to investigate election fraud. But what I will say is that you don't have to have the fate of Texas in the hands of your attorney general. Your clerks and your clerks alone certify the tabulators you use. And if we did our part to apprise them of how defective they are, they could make the choice to withhold certification, number one. Number two, you've got canvassing boards that certify your vote after an election. It's a yes-no vote. They can say no. So we have to do our part in showing up and saying, no more, we can't use these systems.
I love that. I tell you, my producer is texting me saying, you have 4 minutes and someone else using the studio. So we have a question in the front. Did you have a question? You do, okay. Let's do that.
David, we've had some wins in Dallas County. We've got a GOP chair that got changed over in this last election. We've got a wonderful Lieutenant Colonel Alan West that's coming in to fill a very important role. I think we're going to be given the opportunity to do just what you said. Mm-hmm. Other than that, can you talk a little bit more about winning locally to change national politics?
I think we have to redefine what winning looks like. And that's not to lower the standard. To me, winning looks like patriots that are fired up to do the work of engagement on a day in and day out basis. We only want to get involved on election day. That's the call. And we got to play the regular season and win a few playoff games before you get to that point. And so what it looks like to me is every 2 weeks, we show up at our commission meetings to make sure that our local administrators are doing and carrying out our will. And so if you want to tell me what a healthy republic looks like, it looks like people that should be at school board meetings are there. You're challenging property taxes. You're challenging school board curriculum. You're challenging fecklessness with the election administration. And that's what's going to give us hope. Because while I can say, let's get rid of the machines, the populace has to show up and be the replacement to count those votes. So not only do we want 300 people showing up and filling up a commissioner's room saying, defund the machines, you don't have to purchase something that facilitates fraud. But we're also here standing by to do our part to count the votes, much like we did in elections for 180 years plus. I mean, we're talking about things that took place in people's garages, you knew your neighbors. So we got to get back to closed system architecture that more or less was the American experience in the 1980s, 1970s, and it was a better way of doing things.
Love that. Professor Clements, I want to do this because I want to make sure we have time. I didn't get to this other point in introducing I meant to, which was your film went out, Let My People Go, and you were making it available, and you suffered quite a bit of censorship very early on. In fact, I think I just saw Facebook isn't allowing you to share it anymore. So if you can quickly, in 30 seconds, tell us what happened, and therefore, how do people get the film?
Okay. Day of launch, distributed denial of service attack against our servers, trying to overwhelm them. Our DVD packaging company canceled us. Our credit card company canceled us, retained hundreds of thousands of dollars. I haven't seen a penny for the film. Oh. The IRS sent me a bill for about $20,000 the day before Christmas because of a tax return related to 2 years ago when I used to teach accountants how to avoid IRS scrutiny. That happened just after the launch. Our largest promoter pulled out because of the Rudy Giuliani verdict of $148 million. Yeah. So it's been an uphill battle. So that's just scratching the surface. It's the most censored film in America. And right now, you can't find it on YouTube unless you've got a direct link. So we're encouraging people to make it the most bootleg pirated film of all time. It's yours. We gave it away. Just saturate social media where you can until you get
rid. And how they find it? What?
You can go to frankspeech.com to find a free copy and download your own MP4, or you can go on Rumble. You can find it there. And just rip your own version and put it someplace.
Very few filmmakers say that, please steal my film. You're kind of saying that. Please use it. Yeah. Please share it.
I've given express permission that there's no copyright infringement. We're giving the film away.
Professor David Clement, thank you. Thank you. I thank you so much for coming in today. I raced by and I have many more things I want to ask you, but we'll have to have you come back. I hope you can.
I would
and
love
thank
that.
You for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Okay, so my very fine friends, on following Thursday, a week from today, we have Dr. Eitan Haim, H-A-I-M. He was a doctor working at a children's hospital here in Texas that had promised the government they were not engaged in child gender mutilation or, you know, transitioning gender for children, which you can't do anyway. They said they weren't doing it, and then a state law passed, said you really can't do it, it's illegal. And this doctor became a whistleblower saying they're doing it every day, they're doing it all the time. So he brought that story out and trying to expose what the hospital was doing, lying to the government and to our attorney general. They were still doing it. And so then after that happened, the FBI was at his front door. If you can imagine that. So he's being investigated. And so he's telling his story. Dr. Eitan Haim, that is a week from today. And I'm out of time, so I can't tell you anything more. Thank you so very much for tuning in to America Can We Talk. My name is Debbie Georgiadis. Our show is America Can We Talk. You can find it at AmericaCanWeTalk.org. I do this show to speak truth about America because America matters. And I will talk to you next time.
Can We Talk? Truth about America.
Can you hear-